And like when I met him, he's like, I've been looking for you since before you could probably even do this.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Powell. And here on the Peach Jam podcast, I get to introduce you to incredible Georgia musicians. From hometown favorites you already love to brand new voices you're about to discover. It's my job to find different types of people and different types of sounds from all over the Peach State. This podcast is a mix of performances and down-to-earth conversations, all recorded live at the GPB Studios in Midtown Atlanta. On this episode, you'll meet the new rising star in the classical crossover scene, Skylar Peterson.
I'm Skylar Peterson. I'm from Decatur, Georgia, and I am a classical crossover singer.
What does classical crossover mean?
Yes, so classical crossover is a genre that kind of makes up a lot of different things. In its simplest form, it's basically taking themes of classical music and blending it with commercial music. In classical crossover, there's a lot of different overlap with things like adult contemporary and different cinematic types of music. So it's something that really fuses a lot of different styles together into its own unique umbrella.
Who are the big names in that genre?
Yes, so the big names of classical crossover are Andrea Bocelli, Josh Groban, Il Divo, Il Volo. Those are usually the most synonymous names with the genre.
Okay, yeah, and as soon as you say that, it's like, oh, that's the type
yes.
of music you play.
Yes.
Games, acting out names, guessing the parts we played. Oh, what a hit we made. We were next to closing, best on the bill. Lovers until love left the masquerade. Fate seemed to pull the strings. I turned and you were gone. While from the darkened wings, the music bar. Played on.
How old are you?
I'm 21.
Yeah. You are your voice, your speaking voice and your singing voice are much more mature than 21. Where did this come from?
I mean, my mom's a singer and, you know, there's music on both sides a little bit, especially her side. But I think the bass voice, it comes from, you know, my mother being a mezzo. And I think my granddad was a bass and was a bass singer. So we're pretty sure it comes from that line. But it's very interesting because I'm, you know, the deepest in my family. So it was kind of a interesting thing to come about.
Charade.
I started here when I was in Decula at Osborne Middle School. That's when I started playing the saxophone. Mm-hmm. And my love for the saxophone that really crossed over and I got into jazz music, and that was like kind of my thing. I was a jazz saxophonist. I did classical as well, but as a sax player, jazz is your predominant genre. Mm-hmm. So I did jazz, and then when I was in ninth grade, I started teaching myself clarinet. So I was always just middle school through high school jazz musician. I was like the top baritone saxophone player in Palm Beach County when I lived in Florida all 4 years. So I was really just a jazz musician. And then one summer, this is where I really draw it back to. We were going to New York. My sister is a professional dancer, so she was going for an intensive with the Rockettes, and I was going for a jazz intensive. And my mom was looking at Broadway tickets just to see what we'd want to see. And I had always heard of Phantom of the Opera. I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I've always heard of that. Let me just look up what it sounds like, you know? And I heard that, and I was like, something changed. Or I was like, okay, this is hitting right on the nail what I love musically. Because I've always loved cinematic music. Mm-hmm. I've always loved dramatic things. Even when I was younger, I always loved like the villains, the things that were like a little edgy, more sophisticated, things like that. And when I heard The Phantom, and then right after that, the voice of Norm Lewis, who's a famous baritone musical theater artist. He was the first Black Phantom on Broadway. When I heard his voice, especially singing that music, I was like, I think this is something that could fit me, that type of singing with that type of voice. And basically from that moment on, I just had this call and urge to get into singing. And so I just dove headfirst into that. I joined my school's theater program, which was one of the top things at the school, and just went headfirst and was cast as Javert in Les Mis. And that's kind of how it all started. So it started from, you know, that peak of interest from Phantom and musical theater.
And how old were you when that happened?
I was about 16, 17. Yeah.
We're talking about like 4.5 years ago.
Yeah.
I'll pull you close to me, breathing the air you breathe. Every word is a symphony you speak. Your eyes are evergreen, just like you and me. Oh, you're my everything. You're my everything.
This is amazing. Like, it really is amazing, because it feels like it's so fast, but I don't want to diminish the work that you've put in. So it sounds like you discovered that sound that you wanted to do and hit the ground running, and you have a lot of support in that. Am I correct?
Yes, yes, very much so. I mean, I was blessed to have, you know, a good tone and just a voice to work with. And I had the talent coming from my mom. So generationally, it was in my blood. But I was very blessed to have phenomenal teachers. And they were all able to facilitate my growth and basically just allow me to hit the ground running. And I've basically been running ever since then. I haven't slowed down. I've just been training all sorts of ways, you know, training musical theater, training commercially, training opera classically, and then fusing all those things together. So I've been given a lot of time and knowledge from these teachers of technique and how to use my voice. And I've been able to, with my understanding and research of this genre, figure out when and where to use what certain tool, how to blend certain types of singing to make this unique sound that I want to make while using the proper technique and being able to execute it in a way that also makes it the most, you know, accessible for the listener.
Shadows of your love, shadows of your love. I know I'm only dreaming, but I'm yearning for your touch. These clouds I'm floating on, it's all a grand mirage. I hope when I fall, it's in the shadows of your love. In the shadows. Lost in the sweet
I love that you're a student of the sound you you want. Like it it's not something willy-nilly for you. You are studying this, and it sounds like you understand the science behind it. So how does that translate to moving to Nashville, Tennessee, and having a team in LA, and like how does that happen? Because it's one thing to study it.
Yes.
It's another thing to like make it happen.
Yes. I mean, I was blessed with a lot of different opportunities, but with the studying, I was able to learn a lot about just my voice and my instrument. And I did a very big deep dive into those, you know, those giants of classical crossover, because once I was actually talking about earlier, how I discovered this genre even was actually as a family, we were flicking through the channels and turned on PBS and Il Volo was performing. And at first we were like, who are these three guys? These three Italian guys, what are they doing? One guy was like smizing to the camera. Another guy was, you know, singing opera-like when he was singing. And at first we were just kind of like, you know, having a good time just watching it. And then the more we listened to it, we're like, okay, these guys are really good. And what this music is, this is great music. And from there, I did a deep dive on Il Volo, listened to all their music I could. From then, I listened to as much music as I could of Andrea Bocelli, of Josh Groban, of Il Divo, really listening to each of them because they all are so different. I was like, okay, this is the genre that best describes what I want musically. Mm-hmm. And I went with that attitude, and I had, since from doing all my homework, I had realized the producer who had basically made, you know, Josh Groban, Michael Bublé, Andrea Bocelli, who had made a lot of his artists and who everybody in the classical crossover genre was tied to, was David Foster. Mm-hmm. And David Foster and his wife, Catherine McPhee Foster, were coming to Nashville to the Schermerhorn. And so we got tickets and, you know, we watched the performance. It was phenomenal, as always. And afterwards, we were able to actually meet David Foster. And from there, he, you know, asked me if I had music or anything out, and I gave it to his manager, gave all my info to his manager. And then a couple months later, I hadn't heard anything back, just kind of just like let it happen. Mm-hmm. And then I got a DM on social media from Olivier Basile, who I found out later was David Foster's right-hand man. Mm-hmm. And so I connected with Olivier, and I've been working with him for a little over a year now. This past May marked a year working with him. So I went out to LA to work with Olivier Basile, and our goal was to create original music in this space. Mm-hmm. Being my age, I'm the youngest person in this genre right now pursuing it. Mm-hmm. And it's been left open for the next generation to take its place. And like when I met him, he's like, I've been looking for you since before you could probably even do this. And ironically, on my plane ride over to LA, Josh Groban was on my plane.
Oh, no way.
So I got to meet Josh Groban, and my producer had worked with him and was his French coach whenever he would sing in French. Mm-hmm. So it's just a lot of different things just falling in order. And so I went out there, we recorded three original songs in 3 days, recorded them. And then within a year, I was able to get about 650,000-700,000 streams on Spotify and a consistent average of 30,000 monthly listeners. And so that created a great foundation of original music in this genre, describing my voice, who am I, making a name for myself in this lane that's been empty for years. Mm-hmm. And then just recently, I was in LA again, working on three new original songs. And that was with an even greater team. I had a Grammy-winning team on those songs. I had, for the Spanish song, I had Edgar Cortazar, who's a Latin Grammy winner, and actually a writer for Luis Miguel and Il Volo.
Wow.
Who I found out, you know, the same day, one of the songs that we were listening to as inspiration for the songwriting that day, he shows me his phone and said, I sang the demo for that track.
Oh, wow.
So I got literally the people who helped make those artists and who were influential in their music. I got to have legendary drummer J.R. Robinson, the King of the Groove, on two of my three songs for that project. He's played with everybody from Michael Jackson, Quincy Jones, to Madonna, Lady Gaga. Like he's the most recorded drummer in history. A Grammy
winner.
He's on my song, which was phenomenal. I got to go over to his house and meet with him. And it's funny because he was the drummer there that night when I met David Foster. So I would have never have thought I would have gotten to use that drummer.
Yeah.
I gotten to use him on my own music.
Mm-hmm.
So I had them. I had Vanessa Campagna, who's worked on almost all of my songs, and she's a Nashville-based artist who's an Oscar-winning performer for songs in a documentary, an RIAA gold-certified artist, who she actually toured with Marvin Hamlisch when she was young, and she's Barbara Streisand's demo singer.
Wow.
So I've gotten to have a phenomenal team of, you know, writers, producers, you know, mixers, sound engineers. And so we've been able to craft this original music in this lane where even the big names hardly create original music. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of our goal and intention, and been able to kind of carve out this, you know, this place for me in this genre, because everybody I've talked to, it's always been, this genre is wide open. You know, we've been looking for the next, and they kind of gave up at a certain point. And so that's kind of what I'm here to do now, and make a name for myself, to pick up that mantle from, you know, what that was left behind from Andrea Bocelli and Josh Groban, to kind of usher that in for the next generation for classical crossover music.
Take my heart and soul, the shadows of your love, the shadows of your love. I know I'm only dreaming, but I'm yearning for your touch. These clouds I'm floating on, it's all a grand mirage. I hope when I fall, it's in the shadows of your love, in the shadows of your love.
You know, when you think about this genre that you're performing, you're right. Like, there are just a handful of names, and they've been around for a long time. Like, I don't want to admit that Josh Groban is as old as he is and that he's been around this long, but he has. Mm-hmm. And so, because him and I are a similar age. But I imagine in those rooms, in whether it be record office or producer studios or something, they were like, we have got to find somebody new, mm-hmm. or this genre is going to disappear. Yeah. And there you were.
Yes.
In Decula, Georgia.
Yes.
Just ready to go.
Yes.
Does that make you feel important?
I mean, it definitely gives me an understanding of, I've been led to go after this specific genre, mm-hmm. and then to find out that it's been left wide open. You know, no young artist has really tried to break into it. And the audience is still there. The mm-hmm. audience is large. You look at the ticket sales of Andrea Bocelli, Il Volo, Il Divo. I mean, they sell out Madison Square Garden, Radio City Hall, like, and they go all over the world. Mm-hmm. So the audience is there, and the audience wants it. It's just there hasn't been somebody to come up and claim it. And, you know, finding out this open lane, it feels right. It feels like, okay, there's a reason why I've been led to this. And there's a need for it, and I have a passion and have a desire for it. And it's something that I love this music. And even more importantly, I love the international appeal of it. I love being able to, you know, communicate across cultures, sing in different languages, you know, travel. Those are all things that are really qualities that I love about this genre, is how, you know, it reaches people from all over the world. It's not just America.
How many languages do you speak?
I am conversational in Italian, Mandarin and Spanish. I'm trying to get all those up better. And I've done a year of German for schooling. But I've actually been trained in IPA, which is the International Phonetic Alphabet, as a classical singer. So I've sung in French, German, Spanish, Italian, English, Latin, all those different things. So singing in different languages is something I love to do.
So, all right, how does that work? Do they can give you the lyrics?
Yes.
In a way that you can read it, so you're speaking another language?
So basically I'll get the lyrics. And if it's a language that I'm not, like, don't know as well, like Italian or Spanish, if it's like, say, French, which mm-hmm. is the most tricky, you take the words, And there's this thing called the International Phonetic Alphabet, and there's this set of rules that go with how the language works. And you basically write out all these symbols that are based, each symbol means a specific sound universally. Mm-hmm. And you write them all out, and then it basically shows you how to correctly pronounce the language.
Interesting.
So it's, even if I can't speak French, I mm-hmm. can sing in it believably.
Really? Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yes, it's a great skill. It's what I've learned as a classical singer going to school for that. That's one of the first things they teach you.
Really? I had no idea. That's cool.
That's how opera singers do it.
Okay.
I mean, they all try to, you know, be fluent and conversational in the languages, but that's how you do it. It's wow. IPA.
And where did you learn this?
I learned this at Belmont University. Okay. Yes.
In Nashville, Tennessee.
Yes, in Nashville, Tennessee. Yes.
Okay. And oh, wow. Okay, that's something I learned yeah. today. Yeah. The more yes, you know,
well,
right?
When you look up a word and you see these symbols next to it, if you're looking up the definition or in the dictionary, mm-hmm. those little random symbols, that's the IPA. So that's how you pronounce the word.
Mm. Okay.
And it's very interesting.
It really is. Mm-hmm.
We had to take, you know, two full semesters and have all these textbooks and everything.
Yeah, and you didn't sign up for that. You signed up to sing.
But it's, right? been, it's been a phenomenal tool. I've gotten to use it a lot.
Same words I say. I have to say, after meeting you, I'm a big fan. But part of me is like, this guy's so lucky. So you're tall. You have great hair. You're a good-looking human being. You have an amazing voice, and like you can like bring the room to a standstill by singing. Like, couldn't you left a little bit of talent for some of us?
I'm very blessed with all that's, you know, been given to me, and I've been blessed, you know, with the teachers and the training and the work ethic that I've grown up with, and all those things have, you know, really made it what it is. And I think that's the biggest thing, that, you know, my mom always raised us to have a strong work ethic. I mean, anything that we did, you weren't going to be able to quit, you know, mm-hmm. you were going to do whatever it was with excellence. And that's something that was instilled in us at a young age. So regardless of what we were doing, if it was music, for me, if it was academics, if it was, you know, being instrumentalist, being a singer, just different things, you were expected to do all of it to the highest level that you possibly can. And I think that expectation of whenever you go into something, to work on something, is that you're going to put 110% into this, and anything less than that is unacceptable. That, most importantly, is what has allowed, you know, all these things to take place, to get to this point. Because you can have all the talent in the world, but, you know, as everybody knows, if you don't have the work ethic, it's not going to go anywhere. But the person with the work ethic and not the talent is going to surpass. So, you know, being blessed to have some of the natural talent, but then also being instilled this great work ethic, I think that's what has really allowed me to come so far so fast.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, you can find Skylar Peterson's music start to finish on GPB's YouTube page. And don't forget to leave a quick rating and review. That actually does help. If you like what we're doing here on Peach Jam, be sure to tell somebody. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your mama, tell your grandmama. Call your state representative. Whoever you can find, let them know. And if this is your first time here, I invite you to go back and listen to some of the other episodes. You just might find that your next favorite band lives right down the road. Coming up on the next episode of Peach Jam, you'll get a peek behind the curtain of the Atlanta music scene.
It's definitely a community. You could even go further and say it's like a family.
Dub Mac is on the next episode of the Peach Jam podcast. The Peach Jam podcast is produced, edited, and hosted by me, Jeremy Powell. If you want to recommend an artist to be on the show, send me an email, peachjam@gpb.org. Sandy Malcolm is our executive producer. Mark Davenport is our associate producer. Recording, mixing, and mastering by David Spence and Victoria Evans Cash. Special thanks to the team at Sounds Good. Find us on Instagram at Peach Jam Podcast, and look for Peach Jam on TV wherever you watch Georgia Public Broadcasting. In the meantime, please support live local music and independent record stores in your area.